chapter. Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. He fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was famished. The tempter came and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." But he answered, "It is written, one does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him to this holy city and placed him on the pinnacle of the temple, saying to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, so that you will not dash your foot against a stone." Jesus said to him, "Again it is written, do not put the Lord your God to the test." Again the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor, and he said to him, "All these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." Jesus said to him, "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve only him." Then the devil left him, and suddenly angels came and waited on him. The Gospel of the Lord. I was doing the final proofreading of this Sunday's bulletin on Wednesday morning, and knowing that the gospel text had Jesus being tempted by Satan, I opened to the first page of the bulletin and I saw the opening hymn, which was number 666. I wondered whether the maestro up there was having fun with us or it just was an accident that that was the hymn that he picked for us today. I want you to think about two things coming together as a way to look at the gospel text for today. One part of that equation is this human thing called sin. Now, there are sins, you know, the little things that we do wrong, but there's also sin, which is a human condition that's really hardwired into all of us, that by nature we will not do the will of God, but will rebel against God's will. And so we have human beings and their propensity to rebel against God. The other piece I want you to bring into this is the understanding of evil. Now, Hollywood will give you a lot of images of what evil looks like. You know, maybe it's the zombies, or maybe it's this horrendous monster, or maybe it's the guy in the red jumpsuit with the horns and the pointy tail and the pitchfork, whatever that might be. But I want you to consider thinking of evil as the power that undoes what's good and right. To say that evil is at work in the world is to acknowledge that there is a power at work in the world that undoes what is good and what is right. The human beings will find themselves in that moment when things are falling apart, and the question becomes, what do they do when they are living in that moment where evil is taking over? There are two scripture references that tell us that we will encounter times of evil. We can't escape that. But they also tell us that we are called to avoid temptation in that time of evil. You know, the Lord's Prayer gives us that those two lines together, and lead us, what, not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. It acknowledges that evil is real and is going to happen, but please don't give in to the temptation to get away from the evil. It also happens in Psalm 23. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. The evil is there. What are you going to do in those moments when it seems like evil is reigning over all other things? What Satan loves to do is to put in front of people an option for getting out of that bad situation. And what Satan loves to do is to put that option in there, knowing that it's an option that is in rebellion to God, and then waits for the person to actually buy into that option and rebel against God. And then Satan, being the great prosecutor, because the name Satan from Hebrew is literally the prosecuting attorney, then goes to God and prosecutes the person who has then broken God's will. In the midst of those difficult moments, painful moments, the broken moments, people will be tempted. The first temptation that Jesus encounters is the temptation to think that what I have is not enough. That what I have going for me right now is not enough. You know, I had the wonderful story of God's people wandering in the wilderness, and they have the manna from God, and they go and they start complaining against God because they want something to eat, letting on the belief that there's nothing to eat, and we're tired of the manna, they say. It's sort of representative of what my son does about 7 o'clock, an hour after dinner. He was an eating machine at 16 years old, and the telltale sign is all of a sudden we hear the refrigerator door opening and then closing, and then the pantry door opening and closing, and finally we're going to hear these words, "There's nothing to eat." My wife and I will go through the litany of everything we have to eat in the house, and he will simply say once again, "But there's nothing to eat." And then the adolescent version of the temper tantrum, whatever, and then stomps up the steps and closes his bedroom door. It's not that there wasn't anything to eat. It's that he didn't have what he wanted to eat. And that's the temptation that's at work in here. That the belief that what you have isn't enough. And you know what the human behavior is that comes out of that temptation? Grumbling, complaining, or some of the other more colorful words you might hear in secular settings outside of the church. Not being satisfied with what one has. And if you take a look at the introduction then to the book of Colossians, you will see that there is an option, a solution to being tempted, and that is develop the ability to give thanks for what you have. That giving thanks is one way to address the complaining that you don't have enough. The second temptation is rooted in the belief that when God's people are in a difficult moment, that God isn't with them. Once again, we see that play out in their wilderness testing time of God's people. You know, you brought us all the way out here just to die. It would have been easier to be back slaves in Egypt than to be where we are right now. And where's God in all of this? What is God doing? And it puts out the consideration that God has abandoned God's people. But that's not the way God is. God remains ever present with God's people. And even in the darkest, most difficult times, God is there offering divine reassurance. Challenge is, many times we don't ask for what we need. There's a story of a man who was on surely some hard financial times, and he was trying to figure out how he could make all that work, and he opened up the paper, and he saw that the state lottery was over $2 million. He thought, that's going to be the solution. I'm going to win the lottery, and then I have all the money that I need. Next day, he opens up the paper, and his name isn't in there as the winner. He is angry about that, but a day or two later, the lottery goes back up. He sets his mind to the same thing, opens the paper the next day, same result. His name's not there. Because it's a joke, there has to be a third time for him doing it as well, because it's just the way jokes go. And it didn't turn out any different for him. And finally, out of exasperation, he says, God, why isn't it that you won't help me by winning the lottery? And God's response was, then buy a ticket. It's important to be able to ask for what we need. But also to understand that what God provides may be a gift you totally unexpected. I had a member of the congregation in Ohio when I served out there. He was dying of cancer, and his wish was to be able to beat the cancer and to continue to live. And so they prayed for the gift of healing as a family together. The man's cancer wasn't healed, but his son, with whom he had been estranged for 25 years, out of the blue, calls his father and says, I want to find a way to be your son again. And he was healed. The third temptation is the yearning for that one thing, that one person, that one belief that will make everything work out okay. You know, Moses is up in the mountain for an extended period of time, and God's people start to worry because Moses isn't with them anymore. And thought, what if he died up on the mountain and we're here waiting for him and he never comes back? And so what do? They take all the gold that they had stolen from the Egyptians before they left Egypt. They melt it down. They make a big golden cow. And they're worshiping this cow, and Moses comes back down. And Moses, who has the law of God on these tablets that he downloaded from the cloud, get it? Right. Okay. And in anger, Moses smashes them because they had chosen an idol over trust in God. What is it? What is the one thing you think needs to happen to make everything okay? If you want to get at what your idol is, take this phrase, if only, in the blank, list what you think is the one person, belief, or action that will make it right. If only that, then everything would be fine. And whatever you fill in that blank with, whatever person's name, whatever belief, whatever practice, you're getting close to recognizing your idol. My wife did her seminary internship in Frederick, Maryland. And early in the internship, one of the older ladies in the congregation decided to take my wife to lunch. She picked up my wife at the office, and they drove to the restaurant where they wanted to eat. And there was just, the parking lot was packed, not an empty space anywhere. And so my wife said, you know, if we need to go somewhere else where there's parking, we can do that. And the member of the pair said, no, let me show you what happens. And then the lady said, Hail Mary, full of grace, help me find a parking space. And a car backed out just at that moment. It worked. We are so easily drawn in with those things, those people, those practices that we think are going to make it work. God asks us in those difficult moments in our life What are you going to do? It's fascinating to me that in this text, each temptation is based on what God's people did in the Old Testament. And in each time, God's people failed. And then the same temptations, when they come to Jesus, he avoids every single one of them. And so it's not about our ability to make things right. It's about Jesus Christ's capacity to make things right. There are so many times, as I know the pain that members of the congregation are going through, that I wish there was just that one thing that I could do to make it work. I don't have that capacity. But Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is the one who can save us. Jesus Christ, who offered God's gift of forgiveness in all to the people that he encountered. Jesus Christ, who died on the cross. Jesus Christ, who was raised from the dead. In the end, it's up to him to get it right. And he does. Amen.